Last weekend, global superstar Beyoncé dropped her concert film Renaissance, a film by Beyoncé. And NPR's Brittany Luce and B.A. Parker from our It's Been a Minute podcast went to the premiere. Here's Parker.
Beyoncé is wonderful. Blue did great. All the fits, fantastic.
The credits make it very clear who is in charge of making the film. Written by Beyoncé. Produced by Beyoncé. Starring... you get the idea. And in a film that blends footage from her massive record-breaking tour with quieter behind-the-scenes documentary footage, what Beyoncé says is just as notable as what she doesn't. Brittany and Parker get into what was said and what wasn't, and why both of those things are critical to Beyoncé's own mythology.
I feel like overall what I watched was well done, high quality. Also, definitely, absolutely captured the spirit of the experience of seeing it live in concert. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was also a very effectively employed narrative throughout the documentary itself.
For sure.
That like definitely got my attention. I feel like one of the big takeaways that I had from the film was like Beyoncé as executive producer. She was trying to show us just how good she is, and she is damn good at having a vision, communicating that vision, and then executing it.
And still having people not listen to her while she's trying to be a boss.
Yes.
Can I ask you something, though?
What?
What did you learn that was new?
There was this moment early on in the documentary where she's using footage from a concert where they lost sound and like part of the power went out. Mm-hmm. And there was this kind of like disaster basically on stage, which would have prevented the performance from going on.
Yeah.
And you see her sort of like go under the stage and she's trying to figure out like, okay, what song are we going to start with? Am I going to change into my costume? We have like 3 minutes or whatever. It was a very short period mm-hmm. of time to be able to get everything back and moving. And the way that she was able to have that problem get fixed in such a short period of time and be able to move on to pretty much a seamless show, that impressed me. Mm-hmm. She is such a professional when it comes to performance and the precision of her performances. Like, mm-hmm. there's a very famous cut in the Homecoming documentary where the entire... every performer on stage does like a jump turn.
Yeah.
And their costumes change from, I think, from yellow to pink or pink to yellow, whichever. And I didn't realize that was that big of a deal when I saw the documentary. But my husband, who's a documentary film editor, was like, wait.
It's hard.
We have to run that back. He was explaining to me how
it's so precise.
Yeah. It's so precise. They would have had to rehearse not just the choreography and the set and all the logistics, but like every single camera angle, the speed at which the cameras are moving, the camera tracks, all the dolly tracks, like everything would have had to be exactly precise. And she had so many more cuts like that in this documentary, which yeah. I was expecting.
Because I remember the whole like diva sequence.
Yes,
was so good because it implemented that same idea.
Yeah. What to you felt new in what you were watching?
The massiveness of the tour. Mm. This took 4 years in the making. And I was like, damn, we ain't never going to get a part two or a part three. I was like, this took 4 years. There's going to be three more presidents before we get this next album. I think what I love about Beyoncé is the same thing that kind of frustrates me about mm-hmm. her, because she's so curated. Mm-hmm. Like, I know everything and nothing at the same time.
You said that right when we came out of the movie.
I feel like she has bared her soul and said nothing. I was like, I think something profound happened. Can't tell you what it was. Like, she no longer has to do interviews, which, I mean, bless her, because interviews...
I have different thoughts about that, but continue. I'll share them, but continue.
But because it is so curated and so from her perspective, mm-hmm. she doesn't have to be accountable for anything because she's in control of it.
Bingo. One of the things I've been thinking a lot about in her not wanting to do interviews and things like that, she's a person who requests continuously inordinate amounts of the public's time, money, adoration, support, and by not ever engaging with the press at this point.
Yeah.
And like you said, having every single interaction with the public like sanctioned and designed by her.
Yeah.
It's like she's requesting all of these things from the public, but there's no way for her to be held accountable for anything. To me, after a while, I feel like it can also absolutely harm your brand as well.
She's a person who has curated a space, has made herself a political figure, whether she likes mm-hmm. it or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there cognitive dissonance between in her art that we don't want to dig deep in because she's Beyoncé? Sure. I mean, the lady who dresses as a Black Panther on an NFL field and mm-hmm. says, like, you just may be a Black Bill Gates in the making, which are two intrinsically different things.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But it's a vibe because you're like, I feel like I'm still going to dance to Beyonce.
Yes, yes. But I have a theory for why it's so easy for this dissonance to happen. Like, she's trafficked in these leftist political symbols. And there are critics of hers on the left and also critics of hers from within her fan base who are looking at what's happening with Israel and Palestine and feeling like, okay, your silence on this topic is not congruent with the political imagery that you have used in your work. And something that I have been thinking a lot about was like, okay, if this is Beyonce's statement, right?
Yeah.
What is she trying to say to us about not just herself, but also her politics? And I felt like I came away from on Friday night having watched the documentary, I was taking notes and I was saying that like Beyonce's politic to me is very much about celebration, she used that word. Mm-hmm. Joy is a theme that comes up a lot.
Safe space, you said a lot.
Safe space, heal the world. One of the words I wrote down was palatable. Yeah. Beyonce's politics, as she puts them out through her art and through her public image, are very much based in celebration, joy, and palatability. And the thing is that if your political message is palatable, that usually means it's lacking specificity. And that's why if, you know, the song and lyrics, you know, Break My Soul are being co-opted by people whose politics are not, you know, what's considered leftist. I think that's because anybody can project their values onto something that she's made. And I think that's what we've seen play out.
Which is why the segment that was about Uncle Johnny.
Oh, yes. Like her gay uncle who inspired
designed a lot of her clothes and inspired the tour, the album and everything stood out the most to me and was most affecting for me. Because I, you know, I cried during it. Like there was like something beautiful about it. Being able to share that with the fans and like fans having signs like Uncle Johnny made my dress. Like there's like this beautiful legacy to it. And that is a political act.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that I don't know if she would have been confident enough to highlight years ago. So it's clear that she knows what her platform can do.
Mm-hmm.
And what speaking out can do.
I think that you raise a very good point. This is somebody who knows how to use their voice. And so her strategic silence, whether with the press or in certain political moments where she feels like it may be unsafe, quote unquote, I think that her silence is also very telling. And as you said, like after dabbling in political imagery, she is a political figure now, whether or not she wants that.
That's NPR's Brittany Luce and B.A. Parker, and you can hear more of their analysis of Beyoncé's Renaissance film by listening to NPR's It's Been a Minute podcast. I just fell in love, and I just quit my job.